This is a special edition of NPR on Health. I'm Joe Neal. If you've been listening to these podcasts over the past month or so, you've learned a lot about the healthcare systems of five European nations. They all provide universal healthcare to the residents at a cost that's far lower than what the U.S. spends. In fact, in the U.S., about 16% of the economy is devoted to healthcare. In Europe, healthcare takes up only about 10% or less of a country's gross domestic product. Except in Switzerland, the final country we visit. There, healthcare is at about 11% of GDP and rising fast. We sent NPR's Julie Rovner to examine what's happening there. She starts out by explaining the Swiss system to host Renee Montaigne of NPR's Morning Edition.
Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Renee.
Let's begin with the basics. How is the health system in Switzerland different from the one that we've got here in the U.S.?
Well, the fundamental difference, of course, is that everyone in Switzerland has health insurance. It's required by law. Now, it's mostly run through private insurance companies, unlike most of the rest of Europe where it's government-run, but it's still universal coverage.
And about the care that people are offered who have disabilities, I gather you were struck by how that works there.
Yes, the disability system is run by the Swiss government. It's 50 years old, and it's funded by a payroll tax. Now, here in the U.S., we also have something funded by a payroll tax called disability insurance. It's only for workers. It only provides cash benefits. The Swiss system is much more comprehensive, and it covers the entire population.
And those were the main differences?
No, I really think the main difference is one of attitude. The Swiss disability system is really about making sure that everybody who needs care gets it. It's more cradle-to-grave, one-stop shopping. Here in the U.S., yes, there are services available, but families have to go out and hunt for them and often fight to get them.
You visited two families with disabled children, one family here in the United States, the other family in Switzerland, and if you will, take us along on those visits.
Well, the first family I met was Ellen Wallace and Nick Bates and their daughter Tara. I went to see them at their cabin in the Valais region in Switzerland in the Alps. It's starting to rain, but even that doesn't detract from the pristine beauty of this place. Next door, the neighbor's cows are waiting to be milked, while off in the distance, there's snow-capped mountains.
Do you like the rain? Is that what's going on? These are great big splats, aren't they? Tara doesn't talk at all, but she does communicate a bit with sounds. The sound she was just making there is a sound she makes when basically she's contented.
Tara is autistic. She has huge blue eyes and dark blonde hair. She's 16 now.
Should I give you a washcloth?
And as she's gotten bigger and, well, more adolescent, she's not always easy to manage.
Tara, come on, you need a towel. You leap out of the bath, you run away before anyone can dry you or put clothes on you.
If Ellen Wallace doesn't sound Swiss, that's because she's originally from Iowa. Husband Nick is from England. They settled in a little town near Lausanne in Switzerland, where he teaches high school and she runs a website. Ellen soon gave birth to a healthy son, Liam, and then, 4 years later, to Tara. She says she knew by the time Tara was 3 months old, something was wrong.
I had very clear memories of how lovely it was when you're breastfeeding a little baby and they are looking up at you. There's that eye contact that is so critical. And Tara, at this point, never looked me in the eye. It just didn't feel quite right.
When Tara was 3 and a half, she was officially diagnosed as autistic and qualified for Switzerland's federal disability insurance.
It covers the cost of her schooling because she goes to a special education school. She's got a special giant tricycle that was made for her. And this gets surprisingly expensive. You know, she still wears Pampers.
Suddenly, Tara appears at Ellen's side.
What you got? Oh, Tara. Don't get into the garbage, please. Tara likes to chew on paper, and cardboard is especially satisfying because it doesn't disintegrate.
Tara leaves a nearly perpetual mess, so it helps that the family also gets money for things like a cleaning lady or other household chores. Ellen says she particularly likes the way Swiss social workers trust the families they work with.
Their job appears to be to try and be helpful and to get you as much assistance as they possibly can. They're on your side.
But as Tara neared 16, Ellen got anxious. She wondered what would happen to her after she and Nick died. So she went to see her social worker.
She said, basically, you don't ever have to worry. every person who is a Swiss citizen has the right to be able to live decently. For me, that was just like such a huge wave of relief. To have somebody tell you, you don't ever have to worry about how your child is going to be cared for.
That would be, Julie, a nice feeling. Although I gather the Swiss are having some trouble financing these very generous benefits.
That's true. The Swiss spend about $40,000 a year for every person who gets disability insurance. That's actually not a whole lot, considering all the benefits they provide. There are some states here in the U.S. that spend more than that on services for the disabled, even without the medical and educational services that are part of the Swiss system. But still, the Swiss disability system's been running a deficit. But there's no indication that people like Tara, who really need benefits, are going to lose them.
To get a feel for the differences in the two countries, Ellen introduced you to a friend of hers here in the U.S. in a similar situation with her children.
Yes, they met on the internet through a chat group for parents of autistic children. Nancy Legendre, her husband, and their two autistic daughters live in Gloucester, Massachusetts.
Which Julie presumably offers some services.
Oh, yes, of course. The U.S. does offer services, just they're not as generous, and they're nowhere near as easy to access. And when the children become adults, there's really almost nothing that's guaranteed. So this family's trying something that's really out of the box. They bought an old convent that they hope to convert into a group home for their daughters and maybe some other disabled adults.
A convent?
That's right. It still needs a lot of work, but Nancy gave me a tour.
This is one of the bathrooms that the nuns had renovated. They were none gray. No mirrors.
For now, Nancy, her husband Walter Herlihy, and their girls, 17-year-old Lily and 19-year-old Julia, live here by themselves. It's hot and humid, so it's a relief for the girls to be able to splash in the family's backyard pool under the watchful eye of two college student aides. Julia and Lily can't be left alone at all. They can't dress themselves, go to the bathroom alone, or even climb stairs without help. That makes them eligible for programs the state of Massachusetts offers to all disabled children, even those in relatively wealthy families like this one. Right now, aides come for several hours each day, but Nancy says even getting that wasn't easy.
So even knowing we were eligible, we then had to wait over 2 years to get that level of service. It was tough. Lots and lots and lots of tears.
And Massachusetts programs are fairly generous, according to Advocates for the Disabled, in the top half nationwide. What really gives Nancy chills, though, is what will happen when her girls reach adulthood. After age 22, the state doesn't guarantee any services at all. And Nancy still recoils at the idea of putting the girls in an institution or even a group home. So they're using their own financial resources to try to design the girls' future.
So the first thought we had was we would build our own group home, but that the difference would be we'd have the staffing that would eventually live on site to oversee the program, but we would like to live there too. I mean, that would be the ideal. Hi, honey.
For now, Nancy is busy renovating the convent and talking with state officials about actually turning it into a group home. And yes, she's envying her friend Ellen back in Switzerland.
This is a girl who's just had three croissants and some juice in the car.
It's Monday morning in Switzerland, and Ellen is dropping Tara off at school. Tara lives here during the week.
Usually when I drop Tara off on Monday mornings, I have the right, this is kind of Tara who dictates these rules, I have the right to take her up, drop her off, give her a hug and a kiss and say, goodbye, I love you. And then she turns me around and she pushes me towards the door.
It's easy to see why Tara likes it here. The grounds are lovely, the classrooms bright and airy. In the center of the campus are dormitories. Ellen says this is where Tara will live when she and Nick are gone.
Do you consider yourself overall lucky to be here?
No, I'd have to say I consider myself extremely lucky. It's way past lucky.
Julie Rovner, NPR News.
If you want to learn more about Switzerland and other countries with universal care, visit our website, npr.org. Now for another look at the Swiss system, how it takes care of people with chronic mental illnesses. But first, some basics. You heard Julie explaining earlier that everyone is required to buy health insurance in Switzerland and that it's offered through private companies, not through the government. That's attracted the attention of lawmakers here in the U.S. who think that perhaps the Swiss system might be used as a model for universal care here in the U.S. The package of benefits that the Swiss government requires companies to offer is more generous than what's normally offered in the U.S. But as Julie found out, it doesn't cover everything, particularly when people have long-term illnesses. She met with a Swiss family that's experienced the healthcare systems on both sides of the Atlantic.
Cécile Critol-Rapaz is Swiss, but she was actually living in the U.S. when her daughter Anaïs began having emotional problems. Anaïs was 7 at the time.
In Washington, D.C., we find extremely well-trained people who worked with Anaïs, but everything cost a lot.
There was a lot of testing, some psychotherapy, and medication. Critol-Rapaz was luckier than many Americans. Her Swiss insurance covered at least some of her daughter's psychiatric bills, even while her family was here in the States. Many Americans have far less coverage for mental health than for other types of conditions. After 4 years in Washington, the Rapaz family returned home to Geneva.
And then she had this huge breakdown because she changed into middle school. And then she was hospitalized.
Anaïs was ultimately diagnosed with a rare form of childhood onset schizophrenia. That's when Cécile says she was most thankful for her Swiss health and disability coverage.
For example, her hospitalization, she was 5 months hospitalized in the special care for young psychotic children. And that was paid by our insurance. Our daughter got 3 times a week psychotherapy. She has therapy with horses 2 times a week.
That horse therapy is popular in Europe. It's to help children with emotional problems learn to use their bodies. Today, Anaïs is 17. She goes to a special school. Soon she'll start another program offered by the hospital in Geneva that will provide a wide array of services, including art therapy. She's quiet but otherwise friendly as she shyly poses for a photo with her mother in their comfortable Geneva apartment. Later, sitting on the terrace that overlooks a lush courtyard, Cécile explains that their generous healthcare coverage doesn't come cheap.
We have like a luxury system of health, but it costs a lot.
Almost $1,000 a month just in mandatory premiums in the case of the Critol-Rapaz family. That's pretty typical for this part of Switzerland. Cécile brings out the family's health insurance bills. She keeps them in a 3-ring binder. Here's how it breaks down.
For me, it's 400.
That's 400 Swiss francs per month, about $390. Her employer, the Swiss grocery chain Migros, pays 60 francs towards that. Although in Switzerland, companies don't have to contribute to their workers' insurance. Cécile turns to her husband Bernard's bill. He pays less because he chose a plan that limits his choice of doctors. Next page. Now she's on to the extras. In order to get some of the few things that aren't included in the basic Swiss package, the family also buys supplemental insurance.
Okay, for me, 30 francs. That means that I get, for example, all kind of prevention, help at home, glasses, alternative medicine, all these things.
Cécile and her husband also have added policies to provide them with semi-private rooms if they need hospital care. Those are another 105 francs a month each.
That's amazing how expensive it is. I just realized that.
Well, not that amazing. Selling supplemental insurance is the only way Swiss health insurers are allowed to make a profit. By law, they can't profit on the basic insurance package. That's the part everyone's required to buy. Insurers can't discriminate against sick people in the sale of the basic plan either, but they can refuse to sell supplemental coverage to people who are already sick, people like Anaïs. Still, Cécile says about the only thing that really bothers her about the Swiss health system is not how much she pays, but the fact that health insurance premiums don't vary according to people's incomes.
I pay what I pay, but my neighbor, you know, she pays also 400 francs, even though she has a salary which is half mine, for example, and that's unfair.
There are efforts underway to change that, but what about the insurance mandate? Does she object to the fact that she's required by law to buy insurance? Cécile laughs.
Oh, that's really American, your question. No, because you are so used to have this individualistic way of thinking, this pioneer mentality where everybody has to take care of themselves, it's good for people who have no problem, but there is a bunch of people who have fragilities, who have a problem, and these people need a social net.
In the end, says Peter Zweifel, a Swiss health economist, that may be the biggest difference between the Swiss and American healthcare systems, that Swiss willingness, even eagerness, to provide for one another, and why passing a law to cover everyone, as the Swiss did in 1994, remained such an uphill battle in the U.S.
If you permit my remark, I don't see American voters forcing their politicians to write anything like this in the law. It's in your genes. Your ancestors emigrated from European countries because they did not believe in redistribution, but they heavily believe in everyone is responsible for his own luck or unluck, whatever. That's not a criticism. It's just a fact that the mindset of the U.S. population is a slightly different one from the Swiss.
Which may help explain why a universal coverage system, even one based on private insurance like Switzerland's, still seems a long, long ways off. Congress just may, however, pass a law in the coming weeks to require health insurers to cover mental illness to the same extent they cover physical ailments. It's been 12 years in the making. Julie Rovner, NPR News.
Well, that's the end for now of our series, Healthcare for All. We'll be revisiting the way people get healthcare in other countries around the world and in this country as the debate over health reform begins to heat up in the U.S. You'll always be able to find these stories and more on health at npr.org. Just search for Healthcare for All. Thanks for listening. I'm Joe Neal, NPR News.